You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa ko Ototoku Ingoa. Nau mai hari mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Ra'apa Wednesday. I'm your host Otto and I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined by producers Max and Manny. E whai aki nei coming up on the show. For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez March about the Greens' renewed call for the government to recognise Palestinian statehood, the Greens' call for an extension on the Māori Wards referendum, and the most recent failed ETS auction. For Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, I spoke to Professor of Māori Studies at the University of Auckland, Margaret Mutu, about the significance of Te Wiki and the milestones in Te Reo revitalization that have been achieved over the past 50 years. And for this week's Get Action, I speak with Nadine Mortaja, the spokesperson for the March for Humanity, to talk about a petition calling on the government to sanction Israel. Max, what have you got for us today?
I speak to Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa co-chair John Minto to discuss the United Nations officially declaring a genocide in Gaza and how the New Zealand government should respond.
And Manny, what have you got for us today?
I spoke to the PSA's Marcia Peru to discuss the missing candidate profiles in several Māori ward electorates and what they think can be done about it.
Hey, aha o whakaro. I'd love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so get in touch. Tuku pātui mai. Text in on 5395 or waia mai rane. Give us a call in the studio on 309-3879. Kaua e ware ware e āhe ana koutou. Te whakarongo ki ēne kōrero anō. He pakihere roki roki marunga i te pai. Tuku tuku o irirangi pōho. Me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Earlier this week, the Greens made renewed calls to the government to recognize Palestinian statehood and place sanctions on Israel. These calls were made both in light of the 80th session of the UN General Assembly, which opened last week, as well as the recent 20,000-strong pro-Palestinian protest in Tamaki Makaurau, being the largest pro-Palestinian protest in the history of Aotearoa. Additionally, the Greens called for the voting period on the Māori Wards referendum to be extended after candidate profiles were omitted on voting packs in a number of districts, despite being listed on voting papers. Voters on the Māori roll in affected districts had been receiving letters with the missing profiles, but concerns have been raised about the impacts to voter access to information caused by the error. And last week, the latest emission trading schemes auction in New Zealand, which was held on the 10th of September, failed to attract any bids and resulted in no clearing price, making it the third consecutive failed auction in 2025 and the eighth consecutive failed auction overall. For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, we spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez March to discuss all of these issues. To begin, can you tell us in your own words about why the Greens have renewed calls to the government to recognize Palestinian statehood and to sanction Israel?
We have recently seen just last night that one of the top UN bodies has declared that there is a genocide unfolding in Gaza. We have seen this genocide live streamed directly to our phones, the horrendous imagery of people being burnt alive by Israel. And one of the things that New Zealand can do is impose sanctions on Israel as a way to actually punish Israel for the genocide that they are committing. Recognizing Palestinian statehood is about honoring the fact that Palestinian people have a right for self-determination, and the recognition of statehood is part of that. But right now, our priority needs to be an ending this unfolding genocide.
Winston Peters is set to announce the government's position on Palestinian recognition next week at the UN General Assembly. Do you think the recent march in Tamaki Makaurau and show of support for Palestine across Aotearoa might have an impact on the position he takes?
I think Winston Peters will do what Winston Peters does. What I think is really important here is for Christopher Luxon to realise that he's growing increasingly out of touch with the New Zealand public, who I believe opposes genocide, wants all of us to recognise the humanity in each other, and that if this was happening in our soil, we'll be pleading to the international community to take action. So it is time for the Prime Minister to grow a spine and to impose sanctions on Israel as well as recognise Palestinian statehood.
In response to another series of protests held by church ministers at a number of coalition offices in Wellington, David Seymour said that while the government was still committed to a two-state solution, their position on Palestinian statehood recognition would remain unchanged due to the continued presence of Hamas in Gaza. How would you respond to that?
David Seymour may want to have a really deep, long reflection as to why he's regurgitating genocide apologist narratives in light particularly of the most recent report produced by the United Nations confirming there is a genocide happening in Gaza. It's really disappointing and extremely concerning to see our Deputy Prime Minister being a genocide apologist when we need Christopher Luxon to take action. He should immediately chastise David Seymour and take action to punish Israel for the genocide they're committing.
Additionally, and going off of that, Prime Minister Christopher Luxon referred to the coalition's approach to the war in Gaza as being, quote, very consistent and very balanced. Do you think this is true?
It's completely untrue. We're actually becoming an outlier internationally when it comes to taking action, both when it comes to Palestinian statehood recognition, but also taking action against Israel for the genocide that is happening. And this matters to us in the soil because it's about our shared humanity. We should not be allowing a genocide happening anywhere in the world. And that is why Christopher Luxon needs to realize that this is just empty rhetoric. He's just sitting on his hands and not taking enough action to punish Israel for the genocide that they are committing. We have taken action against Russia for the war that they're waging in Ukraine, and we should be taking action against Israel for the genocide that they're committing right now.
And last week, New Zealand voted in favor of a UN General Assembly resolution endorsing a two-state solution between Israel and Palestine, joining 142 other countries who did the same. Do you think this is, at the very least, a step in the right direction?
It's empty words unless we do it domestically. We've had enough of our Prime Minister and Foreign Minister going overseas and making all these remarks without taking action domestically. These words mean nothing if we're not going to, as a country, recognize Palestinian statehood and impose sanctions on Israel.
All right, moving on to the next topic. The Greens recently called for the voting period on the Māori wards referendum to be extended after candidate profiles were omitted on voting packs in a number of districts, despite being listed in voting papers. So next I'd like to ask, can you tell us about why the Greens are calling for the voting period on Māori wards to be extended?
Because right now, due to errors produced by other parties, and by parties I mean other agencies, we have seen voters not have the adequate information to make a decision both on who they're voting for, but then therefore have enough information about who the Māori ward candidates are to then make an informed decision on this referendum. Māori wards are critical to have Tangata Whenua representation. It gives us a unique identity as a country, and voters deserve to have adequate information to make an informed decision, not being forced to the polls with incorrect information in the booklets about who is standing in their area.
Given that the affected voters will receive the missing candidate information only by letter, is there anything else that councils or electoral service providers could do to ensure that all voters are equally well informed?
They could have reprinted those very same booklets. They could have taken an additional effort to platform the people who they have omitted. There are many steps that they could be taken to find a recourse for the mistake that they've made, but extending the referendum is also something that they can do so that it gives them time to work through the mistakes that have happened that have disadvantaged specific candidates and therefore put the integrity of our democratic process at risk.
Do you think that this incident is indicative of wider structural issues regarding how Māori wards have been treated in the electoral system?
We have seen across the board, particularly with certain politicians, peddling negative and misinformed narratives in relationship to Māori wards. I think at the end of the day, this also raises questions about how we run local government elections and the fact that in many cases we end up basically contracting private companies to run them. And that does raise concerns around the integrity of the process, but then the quality of the elections that we run. My call to people listening right now is that make sure you talk to your peers about the importance of voting in the local government election, because these are the people who will be deciding critical things about our infrastructure, about the future of our cities and towns, and that's where the energy should be put into right now, into making sure we have good representation at the council table.
And do you think there's enough scope under the Local Electoral Act to push for a legal challenge if the voting period isn't extended?
I will be supporting anyone trying to take action to make sure that there's an adequate recourse to ensure that this referendum is being held, giving people enough information to adequately participate in it, and that councils take adequate steps to make up for the really serious misfortune that we have seen in omitting specific candidates from the booklets. That actually is one of the few pieces of information voters have to be able to understand what candidates are standing for.
All right, moving on to the last topic. The last week, the latest ETS auction in New Zealand, which was held on the 10th of September, failed to attract any bids and resulted in no clearing price, making it the third consecutive failed auction in 2025 and the eighth consecutive failed auction overall. Next, I'd like to ask, what do you think the most recent ETS auction says about the government's climate policy framework?
But they're simply relying on the market to address the climate crisis, and that has shown to not work. At the very same time, we've got a government that is not cutting pollution at its source, that is not adequately investing in things like public transport, that not just help people get around our cities faster, but also cut pollution. A government that is reopening oil and gas exploration, and they're at the same time relying on people with resources to bid at these auctions to then meet their climate targets. We need a government that is genuine about the climate crisis and recognizes that the cost of living crisis and the climate crisis are intricately connected. The less action we take on climate action, the more expensive it will become to fix it, and the more impacts of climate change we'll see in our communities, like extreme flooding events that end up costing our country and our communities a lot of money, and including potentially people's livelihoods.
So just to reiterate, is the government relying too heavily on offsetting emissions to meet its emissions reduction goals?
The government is not cutting pollution enough, and it's relying on the market to offset emissions. This is effectively just giving polluters a pass to continue destroying our natural environment, and this is why we need a government that takes the climate crisis seriously and recognizes that there are solutions to the climate crisis that can also make life cheaper for people, like, for example, investing in solar energy and installing solar panels in our schools and marae and other public buildings like our hospitals to make sure that we can drive down electricity bills.
And are there any reforms that a Greens-led government would make to the emissions trading scheme?
We have released Haranamata that talks about making sure that we overhaul the emissions trading scheme, but our priority when it comes to climate action is to not just focus on the emission trading scheme, which in and of itself does not guarantee that we cut pollution and emissions at the source. It's about investing in infrastructure like rail networks and public transport, better bus routes and more frequent public transport as well. And that we also solarize our country by installing solar panels in marae and schools and other public hospitals to make sure that we can drive down electricity bills as well.
And that was Green Party MP Ricardo Menendez-March talking to us about the Greens' renewed call for the government to recognize Palestinian statehood, the Greens' call for an extension on Māori wards on the Māori wards referendum, and the most recent failed emissions trading scheme auction.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te waia, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
This week marks 50 years since the establishment of Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, following the 1972 Māori language petition. As part of this week, everyone across Aotearoa is encouraged to use and learn Te Reo Māori, fostering its revival and integrating it into their daily life. However, even 50 years on, the revitalization of Te Reo still faces a number of issues, with the current coalition government facing criticism over its policies related to Te Reo, such as the removal of Te Reo on the New Zealand passport, government offices, and even in some school books. I spoke with Professor of Māori Studies at the University of Auckland, Margaret Mutu, about Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori and the milestones in Te Reo revitalization that have been achieved since it began. Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori is celebrating its 50th anniversary since it began in 1975. So 50 years on, how important has this week been in revitalizing Te Reo Māori in Aotearoa?
I think what Te Wiki o Te Marae o Māori has done has just drawn the attention of the country to the fact that the Māori language is endangered, very threatened, and just given a time for the country to focus on it. But the actual revitalisation of the language, of course, required a lot more than that, and that has gone on regardless. So it's like you take a breath each year to say, oh, hang on a minute, that's right, we've got an endangered language and we need to look at it. And for those who have been very much in this journey to revitalise the language, every day of the year for us, the week is not enough. But it does help highlight the endangered and threatened status of the Māori language.
Who are some of the main groups or players who have helped in the revitalisation of te reo over the past 50 years?
So it started really in the 1970s. It did start at the University of Auckland with Ngā Tamatoa, which was a group of mainly university students, but people who had degrees, Māori, who had degrees, who were feeling very vulnerable and quite angry about the fact that they did not have their ancestral language. Now, I was one of those people. I was not part of Ngā Tamatoa, though, but my father had been beaten for speaking the language. The only reason my father ever taught us anything at all was because my Scottish mother insisted that he do so. She understood really clearly that if we did not have our own ancestral Māori language, then we would lose what it was to be Māori. And she was very, very concerned about that. So those of us in the 1970s trying desperately to claw back our language had to face some pretty hostile attacks, particularly from the media, as we tried to highlight the fact that we couldn't speak our language and we really wanted to revitalise it. So Ngā Tamatoa and in particular Hannah Jackson, Hannah Tehemara, she was, but Hannah and Sid Jackson, Hannah Jackson herself was just a machine who was absolutely determined to raise the attention, just mobilise people to fight for the language. And so she organised the petition that went out that was signed by, I think, about 30,000 people asking for the reo to be available in schools. And then led with Ngā Tamatoa and the Kaumātua from down there in Wellington, led the march to Parliament begging for consideration for te reo Māori. And those ones must never ever be forgotten, because it wasn't just the Pākehā media and Pākehā who were hostile. It was a lot of our own people who were scared that if we raised the spectre of the need to save the Māori language, then that would create a backlash in Pākehā society that my father's generation had been subjected to quite violently, and it had achieved the oppression of the Māori language, the Māori culture, everything. And my generation was just not prepared to put up with that.
And today, who are some of the most important groups or people currently involved in te reo revitalisation?
Oh, there's a huge number. I think the most influential are the kōhanga reo, kura kaupapa and whare kura. So your Māori language immersion preschools, primary schools, secondary schools, they are hugely influential. They are, legislation restricts how many there are. There are huge waiting lists for our children to get in, because one thing that the linguists know is that the best way to conserve, preserve and revitalise your language is to have children speaking it. But what that has done is it has encouraged the parents who were denied their language to actually have to learn the language. So you've got not just the children in those Māori immersion schools, you've got also their parents and their wider whānau. And then you have got on our marae, and we have thousands of marae around the country, it is still a place where te reo must be spoken, especially in the pōwhiri, in the welcoming ceremonies that go on. You cannot do those without the reo. So you've got it concentrated, if you like, and quite clearly Māori and Māori-driven in the immersion schools, but our marais, it's still there, especially in the ceremonial parts of the marais. And then the most powerful one. Education is the most powerful, but also very, very powerful is the media. And there, your Māori radio stations and Māori television have been crucial in this respect. And you hear a lot of Māori on the Māori radio stations. You hear a lot of Māori language on Māori television. Now, getting those out into the wider community has meant there's been a huge uptake of non-Māori learning the Māori language. And that's what we always wanted, was for everyone in this country to be bilingual in English and Māori, to be, feel equally comfortable in both languages and both cultures. We've got a long way to go, but we're a lot further ahead than we were 50 years ago.
So today, what are some of the main challenges that Te Reo is facing, even after all these years?
So you still have those who feel threatened by the Māori language, and you see it clearly articulated by this three-headed monster of a government that thinks that anything Māori, and particularly the language, somehow threatens the dominance of Pākehā in this country. So you've got that attitudinal problem, and I do have to say that it is present within the mechanisms of government. So the Ministry of Education has been quite hostile to Māori language, to Māori contributions that aren't dictated and determined by the Ministry of Education out of a largely Eurocentric approach to the teaching of Māori. In other words, Pākehās will decide what is Māori culture and Māori language. And we are really seeing that now with the banning of books that readers for five-year-olds that have Māori words in them. You're seeing it with the exclusion of anything to do with the language or the treaty in the English curriculum and the mathematics curriculum. As a linguist, I just find this absolutely bizarre because we do not live in England. We live in the South Pacific, in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and this is a Māori country. So why on earth would you not speak Māori when thousands of place names around the country are Māori? So you have this fear. It's an unfounded fear amongst bureaucrats, some bureaucrats, and amongst some of the population, this uninformed fear of the power of the Māori language. And it's quite sad, really. Quite sad.
And lastly, what are some of the main ways that our listeners can not just celebrate Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, but also Tautoko Te Reo throughout the rest of the year?
Oh, just any chance that people get to be able to listen to it, to be able to enjoy it. Particularly, I really appreciate it when television, both mainstream, both Pākehā and Māori television, do put subtitles up so that you can follow what's happening. And if you listen, you can start to appreciate the language. You start picking up words. But really, the thing that I would really love so that the country could tautoko i au reo is that people just take the time and make the effort to learn Te Reo Māori. It's a beautiful, beautiful language that belongs in this country and is made for this country. And it opens everybody's thinking to a much broader spectrum of this country than English ever can, because English belongs in England. Māori belongs here. And I just encourage everybody to take the time, make the effort to learn Māori as much as you can, but just to be able to appreciate that you have a right, everybody has a right, to be able to speak and understand Te Reo Māori.
And that was Professor of Māori Studies at the University of Auckland, Margaret Mutu, talking to us about Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori and the milestones in Te Reo revitalization that have been achieved since it began. We'll be right back after a quick break. Keep it on the B.
95 BFM.
Te pūrākau he whakamari re, me tā whio kia ora mai nei. me whiu ki te ao haere ake nei.
Ko te kōrero, me whakakiri noa, takitini te kōkiri, kei te hipa noa, te waka, tīwai, kei te rere ake ai, nā wai, te mokopuna katu, ka pakari, katu I te kei, urungi taku waka, kōkiri nei, aha ko te aha, whaia kia tātara,
Atena ai, noku me ko te mana mo onara, kazi mo te haere e mana hauana, nā te kionga te tihi te komata e angi tūnei, tanuku kore ana, because of these people. Piki ana rā nei tō koke?
Haa, e koke ana, kai hoa pia te aupikitanga.
Mā te aha, ringa ki te ringa, ho ake tauā.
Whītiki tauā.
Whītiki tauā.
Whītiki tauā.
Ko te rangi me te whenua ka pāhe mō, ko te reo mautonu ki te ārero. Tūtonu, mautonu, tūtonu, tūtonu, mautonu. Ko te rangi me te whenua ka pāhe mō, ko te reo mautonu ki te ārero. Tūtonu, mautonu, tūtonu, no hea riro I a maki ūnu.
Traces, the collaborative album from Rian Sheehan and Ali Lieberman, is out now. Experience the ethereal cinematic world of Traces, an intimate and immersive soundscape that blends electronic, ambient, and post-rock. Traces, by Rian Sheehan and Ali Lieberman, out now. Available digitally and on limited edition vinyl and CD at all good music stores.
Wow, we get along so well. I feel like I've known you my whole life.
I know, it's crazy. I'd love to see you again.
Sorry, I just have to ask. Your hoodie is so random. What is 95BFM?
Oh, I knew this was too good to be true.
What? Wait, where are you going?
No!
Show the world exactly who you are with our range of classic 95BFM merch. From the BSA slogan t-shirt to ringer tees and hoodies, get yours now at twotonesmerch.co.nz.
Okay, Meadow, we can't lose again, or it's off to the factory. Go, Meadow! Go! No, other way! Don't you want to live?
Gonna get there, good horse! Headway wins the Spring Cup!
Oh, no, Meadow. I won't let them take you, Meadow. We'll find a way. I just saw a documentary about a basketball-playing Labrador. Maybe you can learn an unconventional sport, too.
Pony Ping Pong with Matt and Aaron, bringing as much entertainment to your Friday night as a Shetland pony skee-balling the table edge. With a mix of mashdowns, candid conversation, cheap shots, and mystery celebrity nakedness. Pony Ping Pong, Friday, 9 till 11 p.m., only on 95BFM.
Arcade Radio, Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m., classic bands, scalding hot takes, and advice on how to cuff your pants. It could only be Auckland's leading skate brand affiliated radio show.
Arcade Radio, for all that and music from all corners of the globe, tune in to Arcade Radio, Thursday nights from 7 till 9 p.m., with Dylan Biscuit and Leon Aoki. Yeah,
yeah. Arcade Radio.
Only on 95BFM.
We don't agree with violence. We do not agree with the government. Nah, we do.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM.
Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. Please let us know your thoughts on any of these pieces today. Text in on 5395 or call us on 309-3879. This morning, the United Nations Commission of Inquiry officially announced they had found that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. To count as genocide under the 1948 UN Genocide Convention, at least one of five acts must have occurred, of which the Commission accuses Israel of committing four. The Commission of Inquiry does not speak on behalf of the UN, however, they have called on member countries to punish those responsible for it. To this date, the New Zealand government has not issued any type of sanction against Israel or officially recognized a Palestinian state. However, Saturday's pro-Palestine protest, which attracted around 25,000 people to the streets of Auckland, has only increased pressure on the government to act. Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa co-chair John Minto believes that recent protests are an accurate measure of where the Aotearoa public stand on this issue, and that it's time for the government to abandon what he describes as pro-Israel policies. To discuss this, as well as the UN Commission of Inquiry declaring genocide in Gaza, I spoke with John Minto. What's your reaction to the UN Commission of Inquiry declaring this?
Well, I think it's an appropriate ruling. It follows on from, I think, every major human rights organisation around the world, and it follows the International Court of Justice finding that Israel was involved in a plausible genocide. So to have it confirmed by this UN body is appropriate, and should be a signal for governments to take strong action.
Can you explain the significance of this, and does it change anything that we already knew before?
Well, it doesn't change what we've known before. I think the whole world has known that, just watching the social media feeds, the whole world has known that there is a genocide that's been going on. It's confirmed by all the major human rights groups such as Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. So it doesn't add to what we already know, but it is a United Nations body which has made this finding. And so all of the people who have been giving Israel the benefit of the doubt, if you like, all of that's gone now. There's no cover whatever for Israel, and there's no cover for any country continuing to deal with this genocidal state.
Do you think that this declaration will be enough for the New Zealand government to recognise Palestinian statehood and possibly sanction Israel?
Well, it should be. It should be the moment when New Zealand breaks from what it's been doing, which has been giving essentially complicity to Israel by refusing to even condemn the genocidal acts and the war crimes which Israel has been involved in. It should be the wake-up call for New Zealand to say, we are going to sanction Israel at least as much as we sanctioned Russia when it invaded Ukraine. We should be prepared to go much further, though, because this sort of situation has gone on for 77 years. The last 2 years have just been like a genocide on steroids. It's always been called a genocide by Palestinians, but the last 2 years it's been a genocide on steroids. We should be standing with Palestinians at this moment, and our government should be putting every sanction possible in place. We should end all of our trade with Israel. We should end any investment in Israeli companies. We should send the Israeli ambassador home. We should say that never again in Nazi Germany in the 1930s means never again for everybody in the world, and that includes Palestinians today.
New Zealand's share of total Israeli exports is around 0.3%. Given that this is so small, why has it proven to be so difficult for the government to sanction Israel?
Well, that's a really good question. I think it's more to do with the government being concerned about how the US will react. And this is really mealy-mouthed policy. New Zealand in the past has stood quite strongly for our values, for things that we believe in, and for human rights around the world. This is the first time in my lifetime I can remember that a New Zealand government has not taken action against the sort of things we're seeing happening in Gaza today and in the occupied West Bank. This is absolutely unconscionable, and it's an embarrassment to all New Zealanders. We need our government to speak up for our values really clearly. And yeah, we know America won't be happy with that, but that's not our problem. That's America's problem. And it won't impact New Zealand significantly at all in terms of our trade with the US.
You mentioned the United States' opinion on the situation. Israel recently launched a ground offensive this morning into Gaza City and then also recently launched strikes in Qatar targeting Hamas leaders who were there for peace talks. And despite this, Qatar being a long-term US ally, Marco Rubio, the US Secretary of State, still went on to state that Israel has the United States' full support. Do you have any explanation for this?
Well, only that the US administration has stood beside Israel all the way through because it suits the US to do so. It's not because the US supports a separate Jewish state. They don't. They simply support having a client state in the Middle East that will mean they have a sort of de facto control of the resources of the Middle East, and they use Israel to attack any group which defies United Nations appropriation of the resources of the Middle East. So it's a self-serving policy from the US, and New Zealand should have no part in it.
And in terms of public opinion in Aotearoa, do you think even if the government were to step in and do something, it might be a bit too late?
Well, I think it's too late to wipe the stain of an action that the government wears from 2 years of watching a genocide unfold in Gaza. I think that is too late, but it is not too late to rehabilitate to some extent our international standing by speaking out very clearly now. Unfortunately, there's no sign that the government will do so. Winston Peters is determined to keep New Zealand foreign policy tightly aligned with the US. And that's against what the majority of people in New Zealand want. The public opinion polls that have come out are showing people who give an opinion 2-1 are in favour of sanctioning Israel, and 2-1 are in favour of recognising a Palestinian state. Our government has not done either of those things. But I have to say the most important of those is the sanctions against Israel. Recognising a Palestinian state won't stop the genocide. Sanctions against Israel will.
And that was PSNA co-chair John Minto on the UN Commission of Inquiry declaring genocide in Gaza and why sanctions against Israel are the only way to disrupt this.
Bang! Pow!
It's Get Action, The Wire's weekly check-in with Action Station Aotearoa.
Over the weekend, the largest pro-Palestinian protest in Aotearoa's history was held in Tamaki Makaurau, drawing a crowd of well over 25,000 people. One of the main calls of the protesters and the organizers was for the government to place sanctions on Israel for actions they've committed during the war on Gaza, which the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territories has officially referred to as genocidal and have led to the deaths of almost 65,000 Palestinians since October 2023. For this week's Get Action, I spoke with Nadine Mortaja, one of the organizers behind Saturday's March for Humanity, about a petition of hers calling on the New Zealand government to place sanctions on Israel. So to begin, can you tell us about your petition and your calls to the Prime Minister and Ministry of Foreign Affairs?
Yeah, so the petition was started on September. We launched it in September, the 13th of September in the morning, before we began the March for Humanity. And the petition is for the New Zealand government here to sanction Israel for its war crimes, that is economically, politically, diplomatically as well. It's something for all of us as individuals can do to sign the petition. And it's also for the New Zealand government here to see that the people in Aotearoa demand sanctions on Israel for its war crimes. There's been a genocide happening for the past 2 years. There's a man-made famine happening since August. And it's time for the people here in Aotearoa to stand up together. And that's coming in the masses and signing this petition so we can show the New Zealand government that this is what the people in Aotearoa want and need from the government.
Do you think the turnout at the recent 20,000-strong March for Humanity in Tamaki Makaurau could have an impact on the government's outlook on the situation in Gaza and push them towards implementing sanctions as well?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the march was endorsed by big organizations and unions, 150 plus. And we came in the masses. I think there was around 50,000 of us, actually. Once we saw those drone footages of people on Queen Street marching, I think it was more than 20,000. Once we got to Victoria Park, people were still leaving Aotea Square. So it just showed that the people in Aotearoa have spoken. The people in Aotearoa demand sanctions on Israel. And it's time for the government to listen to the people in Aotearoa because this is what we demand. This is what we want. It's time for us to hold Israel accountable for its horrific war crimes that they've been doing since the past 2 years in Gaza. So it's time for us to come together and to sign this petition to show the government here in Aotearoa that this is what the people demand and this is what the people want.
Just yesterday, a report by the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory directly claimed that Israel was committing genocide in Gaza. Do you think that this report could have an impact on the government's position on both Palestinian statehood and sanctioning Israel?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the leaders have spoken up. Spain, like just last week, you know, put sanctions on Israel. So I think the world is waking up. I mean, it's very unfortunate that it's taken them 2 years to wake up. And I mean, this has been happening since 1948. There's a big rooted history with the occupation and everything that's been happening in Palestine. But I think it is time for the New Zealand government to stand on the right side of history and to do something. We want to look back at our history in 10 years' time and say, yes, we did do something when there was a genocide happening in Gaza. We stood on the right side of history. We implemented sanctions on Israel because words are not enough at this point. It's great that the UN finally declared that there's a genocide happening, but it's not enough. I mean, there are innocent lives that are being lost. People's homes have been destroyed. They've bombed schools. They've bombed hospitals. Children in Gaza haven't had an education in the past 2 years. So it's time for us to come together and to sanction Israel for its war crimes.
Since both the march and the petition launching, have you been able to get any kind of correspondence from the government or the Ministry of Foreign Affairs?
We haven't. I mean, we have been trying to contact the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. We've been trying to meet up with our government as Palestinians, but they have declined. They haven't come. They haven't attended any of the protests. They haven't spoken to us Palestinians that have been going through this, that have Fano in Gaza. So the government here, it truly shows where they stand. But I think after this protest on Saturday, I think it truly showed them, and they should be scared and they should be shocked about the amount of people that have come, because we will continue to grow as a movement, as people. We will continue to mobilize until the government here in Aotearoa sanctions Israel for its war crimes.
Following both the March for Humanity and the recent protests by Christian ministers outside government offices in Wellington, many of the coalition MPs have put out statements effectively saying that New Zealand's foreign policy regarding the war in Gaza would remain unchanged. For example, Prime Minister Christopher Luxon said that the coalition's approach to the war in Gaza was very consistent and very balanced, and David Seymour said that Hamas's continued involvement in Gaza would be a barrier to New Zealand recognizing Palestine. How does this make you feel regarding the government potentially taking action?
I mean, it's very disappointing to say the least, you know. This has been happening, just like I said, since 1948. Gaza has been under siege since 2006. Everything is controlled by Israel into what enters Gaza through land, through sea, through air. The people in Gaza aren't able to travel. They can't go in and out freely like any other person does. There's no airport in Gaza. Recognizing Palestine as a state should have happened. They've been talking about it for decades, but it's time for us to actually sanction Israel for its war crimes, because other countries have done so. So why isn't the government here in New Zealand doing so? It's time for us to actually hold Israel accountable for its war crimes. They've bombed the Freedom Flotilla boat in Tunisia. They've bombed Qatar. They've bombed Lebanon. They've bombed Syria. They have been bombing, carpet bombing Palestine for decades. So why aren't we doing something? We need to do something, and that is coming in the masses, and that's mobilizing, and that's telling our government here in Aotearoa to do something about it and to sanction Israel for its war crimes.
All right, well, I think that's about everything from me, but is there anything else you'd like to add before we conclude the interview?
I think everyone needs to sign the petition. If you're wondering where you can find the petition, if you search up Aotearoa for PAL on Instagram or Facebook, it is in our bio, so go look it up and go sign it, because everyone needs to sign this petition. It's important for the people here in New Zealand. It's important for us Palestinians. So sign the petition. Thank you.
And that was Nadine Mortaja, one of the organizers behind Saturday's March for Humanity, talking to us about a petition of hers calling for the New Zealand government to place sanctions on Israel. If you'd like to sign this petition, you can find it on our.actionstation.org.nz under the name NZ Government Sanction Israel Now. We'll be back after a quick break. Keep it on the B.
Wow, important stuff.
That was Get Action on 95 BFM.
95 BFM!
Is it too late in the process, though, to change that?
Nothing's too late, bro. Everything's made up in politics.
The Wire.
In a story we touched on at the beginning of the hour, the profiles of candidates standing in several Māori ward elections were missing from booklets given to enrolled voters intended to inform their votes. In response to the missing candidate profiles, the PSA, Te Pukenga Here Tikanga Mahi, the Public Service Association representing public servants, has called on the government to move the responsibility for running these elections out of the hands of private companies and back to the Electoral Commission. I spoke to the PSA's acting Kaihautū Māori, Masia Puru, to discuss the PSA's view on the missing candidate information and its implications.
What has happened with these Māori wards in the local elections? There's been information that's been missing. I'd love you to speak on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the moment, what we do know is that there are missing information in both the Whanganui, Tiki and South Wairarapa, but we are aware that there could be more. We do know that there's actually candidates in Nelson that this has affected as well. So the problem here is that we've got missing information for candidates who are standing in the local body elections for Māori wards.
And this is coming at the same time as there are referenda happening on the Māori wards. With that broader impact at play, how significant is this?
Oh, this is huge. We're extremely concerned with the system, the integrity of our candidate election and the referenda that is going on at the Māori wards. But most importantly, the voters' rights to hear from all candidates who are standing in this year's election at councils before making their informed decision on who they want to vote for. So we're saying that this has just been obscured and it's a vital process for voters, you know, when they're voting. To be honest with you, it's not a good look. It's really bad for democracy. Complete disregard for Māori rights in the local elections. And to be fair, it's probably a classic example of inequality that we've experienced, seen and continue to see for Māori in Aotearoa.
Do we know at all why this has happened?
Absolutely no idea, other than there is a private company that was doing this mahi and this work, and we've understood that that was contracted out to them to do, and someone needs to be held accountable for this. At the moment, the PSA has, as you know, written to both the ministers, our Minister of Justice, Paul Goldsmith, and Simon Watt, their local government minister, to try and see if we can ask the Electoral Commission to take over the running of the local elections. Giving them responsibility and proper resourcing to run the election will help deliver more consistent results across the country and accountability that New Zealanders deserve. That's our request, and we've asked her to meet with them both to discuss our solutions, because someone needs to be held accountable and something needs to happen in order to resolve it.
A lot of people probably aren't aware that our local elections are ran through private companies oftentimes. How often does this create issues or flaws, do you think?
Look, you know, one council missing information could be seen as a mistake, but three or more, potentially, that's a catastrophe, and we've never seen that in New Zealand in local body elections before.
Do you feel like this coming at the same time as the referenda could be important for this mistake? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. One, people are voting to keep Māori wards. Two, they get to elect their candidates for the Māori wards. So it's an impact hugely for Māori that want to, you know, obviously vote for the right candidates. They don't have that information now in these booklets. I guess that they'll need to look at a solution in order to meet the candidate's ability to stand and be voted for. You know, New Zealanders have the right to understand who they are and who they want to vote for.
There has been talk about the impact of the missing information on the outcomes of not just the ward elections, but also the referenda as a whole. Some people have called for the cancelling of the referenda for this election. Do you feel like that's appropriate?
I look, at the end of the day, I think it's up to our people to stand up and advocate for that, if that's what they want to do. It seems fair. The process at the moment has discriminated against those that are standing in councils. We're concerned about that. We're also concerned that people don't have the information in order to vote for their candidates that they want to stand for their councils, particularly for Māori wards in this case. So yes, I mean, at the end of the day, it will be up to the people to decide whether they want that to be done. And, you know, that's democracy.
For the PSA, what would it mean to have these elections nationalised?
I want to stress the fact that New Zealanders, all New Zealanders, including Māori, have the right to vote at any local body elections for council. The referenda is definitely significant and hugely important to us, and our members across the councils that we represent, they also deserve to be in the communities, talking to people that they want to talk to, but also supporting the fact that they get to vote on the information that they've received. And we don't believe that that's happened at all for Māori wards and Māori candidates standing.
And not just the letters to the ministers, but the PSA sent out information to their own members as well.
Yes, that's correct. So, you know, we believe that our members have the right to understand in those areas who they want to vote for. This is our way of supporting that and getting behind the democracy that they deserve in Aotearoa.
That was the PSA's acting Kaihutsu Māori, Marcia Peru, discussing the missing candidate information. An update, according to RNZ reporting, a printing error was identified and has been owned by an electoral officer for the private electoral service provider, Election NZ.
That was The Wire.
Ko I rā te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi kia koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki au mō tēnei rā.
That's a wrap on the Wednesday Wire. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today. The Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March, Professor of Māori Studies at the University of Auckland, Margaret Mutu, John Minto from the Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa, spokesperson for the March for Humanity, Nadine Mortaja, and the PSA's acting Kaihutu Māori, Marcia Peru. Nei rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakurongo ana. Thanks for tuning in to 95BFM. Next up is the Wednesday 1-4 with Bridge. Have a great day and keep it on the beat.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.